So welcome to IBUS Studio. In today's episode, we talk about very interesting topics such as branding, product development, design anthropology, and strategic customer understanding. Very difficult words to pronounce in English. For this, we have a very exciting guest, Anna Haverinen, in the studio with us. Anna is the insight strategist and design anthropologist in a marketing communications advertising, branding and design agency called Grundlage, which operates in Turku, Finland. Yes. So welcome to the studio. Welcome to IBUS Studio, Anna.
Thank you for having me.
And of course, in our studio, we have our COO, Jani Jokela, with us. Welcome, Jani.
Thank you. Regular guest.
And let's go straight to the questions. So, Anna, you have a very unique background in design anthropology. So let's say let's have an example. Let's imagine that a company is struggling with branding and product development. In your opinion, what are the key major things that must be taken into account right at the beginning?
Very good question. That's a very broad question as well. It depends on the goals, of course. What are we trying to achieve with the branding or the product development or the branding of the product in question. But first and foremost, we need to have all the key stakeholders involved in the process. So sometimes and oftentimes there are people who are just like people in the company, they have different kind of objectives and different kind of goals and different kind of resources to do these things. So before we start any kind of this kind of projects, we usually try to have all the key stakeholders within the company around the same table and discussing and sharing information, and especially the kind of like the silent information, if you know what I mean, the kind of the kind of stuff that we as consultants, as a design agency that is hired for do different kind of things for the company, do not necessarily know. The sentence that I most often hear is, it's not going to work, we tried that a couple of years ago. So we try to begin to gather all those kind of informations and all those kind of mental obstacles as well before we start, whether it's branding or product development.
So one thing I know behind the scenes, I know that you have the magic touch. When you start things, the client might ask you something that, okay, we need to do this branding thing. Then you start the project with the client in the first meeting, your questions open up the real need for the company, and the project might get a little bit bigger and more detailed on the you know, what's the actual need. The order is different than the outcome. That needs some kind of skill. Can you open what is your process?
At Grundlage, we have this very unique value proposition for our clients that you don't get what you initially wanted. It's very difficult to translate in English, but you will get something more. And usually when the companies approach us, because we have a very heavy marketing communications background, so usually the companies come to us that, okay, we need a street advertisement campaign, or we need a radio campaign or something like that. And we're like, okay, sounds good. But let's revolve a little bit background from that and start to look at the business and the industry that you're working on and the clients and the end user customers. And what are you trying to actually achieve with that initial idea? And usually the outcome is very much different than the brief. And I find it very, very much fun to work it like that, because I get to ask our customers the kind of questions that, like, why are you existing? Like, why is your company existing in the first place? Which is very, very heavily involved in branding. And what if your company disappears? Will anybody miss you? Or will anybody notice? And those are heavy questions. And usually our clients are not prepared to answer them, those kind of questions.
So in a nutshell, you won't get what you order, you will get what you need.
Yes, very much so, yes.
Let's talk about design anthropology. I think this is a very interesting theme. As already said, you have very unique skills and knowledge in that field. Yet you are working in a marketing, communications and advertising company. So what is a design anthropologist doing in an advertising company?
That's very good. Good point. Grundlage is almost 2 years old, but most of our employees have a very extensive background in marketing and design. And I have a background in IT development and mobile application development. In my previous employer, at Taiste, I was very heavily involved in the first stages of digital service design. And from that, I really wanted to evolve my skills and evolve myself and my career, particularly into more to the business sector and in the strategy sector as well. And before we start building any kind of digital products, I wanted to be involved in the process of kind of figuring out what should we do. And since the kind of business consultancy that we do at Grundlage is very, as Jani just described, very much part of the entire process of beginning a project. And I'm good at asking questions. So that's something that anthropologists are trained to do and inherently sometimes are very good at as well. So I met our CEO almost exactly 2 years ago, and we hit it off. And she's like, "I want you to work with me. I want an anthropologist in my team." So it's not something that's very, very, very common in marketing companies, but it's working out pretty well. Our clients seem to appreciate it as well.
That's great to hear. One question that I was thinking that, as you already said, it's not quite common that anthropologists are working in maybe in a private sector business field. So how has it been working in a private sector in different businesses in different companies as a design anthropologist?
I've been doing this for roughly around 8 years now. I did my PhD, defended my PhD in 2014, and a couple of years before that, I got hired for Palomo Service Design Agency, and that was basically my first introduction to what is service design and how kind of human insight can be applied in designing and planning and executing services. Whether they're digital or face-to-face or whatever. And I was hired as an ethnographer, which is a qualitative research method or an umbrella of different kind of methods. And I was deeply involved in interviewing and observing and gaining kind of like the customer insight process. And I began there. And slowly from there, I got opportunities to start understanding how digital products are created and how the business around digital products should be created as well, and how to attract users of applications and different kind of services, and how to maintain them as well, keep the customers using your service. So it's been a really different kind of objective since my first plan was to pursue a goal career in academic sector. But that being said, it's not a very fulfilling career in terms of employment. since it's a fixed contract, it's maybe six months grants or maybe 1 year contract with the university or something like that. So I wanted something that was more sustainable. Mm-hmm. So having a doctor of philosophy and anthropology background, and then my thesis was about digital environments and digital services, and how people were using that to mourn and honor their departed loved ones, and how kind of these death rituals were carried out in online environments. And that kind of led to an interest also that, okay, people are using this in a very, very different way that they are initially planned and executed. So, for example, Facebook. And that kind of led me to get more insight and knowledge of how these products are actually created and what kind of decision makings are behind that process as well. So first understanding people, then understanding technology, and then understanding the business and the design process of those services, if I could kind of like summarize it all together. But it's been fun, not easy, fun.
How would you describe the, you've been mainly working in Finland, but like past 10 years, there's been quite big like wave of design, and businesses are more used to order or hire designers. So how do you describe the change within 10 years? Here.
Well, coming from the humanities, this change is pretty much something that I've been always dreaming for, because I did the Indiana Jones package at the university. So I studied anthropology and archaeology and museology and stuff like that. So I didn't have any kind of career plan of doing work in the private sector. I was like, okay, I can work in the museum sector. So, but slowly the businesses and the cold kind of like this economic climate has been evolving around data and how to understand data better. And first where we were really excited about big data, of course, because we had this technology and it can allow us to do sort of stuff with big data and all those kind of excitement around that and innovation. That was the buzzword of 2010, innovate. And now it's more focusing on not on data as a how could I describe it, like not all data is relevant, but we have to find relevant questions to find the relevant data, and that has been really, really fruitful from my perspective, especially coming from the anthropology, because we usually approach things trying to have a blank slate and no hypothesis is and no kind of like no prejudices, and trying to look at things as they are. So the businesses in different kind of industries are understanding the value of that. And nowadays we also of course have research that companies that apply design in their business are doing much more, gaining much more revenue and the other companies. So we have kind of like a background, backup data for that as well. But yeah, it's slowly developing to a world where companies are inherently trying to serve the customers from their point of view and not kind of assuming stuff. Not easy, because our brains are wired to assume and categorize and put things and people in the boxes. So it's not easy to be just like, I don't understand this. Well, maybe like we should find out, because we don't like to feel dumb.
We also have a question about your mission. You have said that your mission is to build strategies and services that are customer oriented by heart. Could you explain this for us a little bit? What do you mean by that?
Just realized when you asked that actually I don't agree with that anymore. One particular word, not customer oriented. That's for my LinkedIn profile, I think so. So customer driven by heart, I would say nowadays. I need to update that. But anyhow, customer driven in a way that, as I just said, that we like to assume and our brains are wired to assume, and especially companies that have services and business that have, they have customers that we talk about in millions or hundreds of thousands. So it's not very easy to understand people and humans from that perspective, because you're thinking about kind of like this abstract notion of customers in a bulk, and kind of like you have these customers. So what I really want to do is help people to understand that it is okay to use segments in those kind of massive amounts of customers, and kind of like understanding the different needs and differentiations that these kind of segments have. And when you're serving those segments, you know, maybe a little bit differently than the others, you gain a lot more than just creating the services and kind of like this abstract notion of all customers. So that's what I really like to do, and that's kind of like my passion currently. And when talking about strategies as well, oftentimes strategies are created according to the numbers and statistics and kind of like these predictions of how the numbers are going to be in 5 years or 10 years or something like that. So I would really like to bring alongside that people, and how the people are going to be in 5 years, how the people are going to be in 10 years. And this is not necessarily talking about customers, but also your employers. Kind of like that. Who are the people who are working for this company in 5 years or in 10 years? Who are the people who are enabling all of this? Because not all industries are going to adapt to technologies or AI, if you will. But we still need people in the middle of creating all this. So that's really that's really something that I'm really interested in at the moment.
So what do you think? You have a quite extensive experience in academia and also in private sector, in business sector. So when you're applying anthropology in private sector, or what's the difference in your academic career?
That's a really good question. First thing that comes to my mind is speed. Applied research, the speed of applied research is much more quicker than academic work. For example, a year ago, I was actually working in a short project for the School of Economics here in Turku, and I was working in a project that my main goal was to write and edit articles about particular research material that they had collected. So to use that as an example, I wrote an article during those four months. And we submitted it to a journal in February, and we got a response early this month, yes, in November, that thank you for your submission, but this particular piece is not suitable for this journal, and we recommend it to publish it in another journal. So it took a year to find out that the particular journal that we wanted to publish the article wasn't a good selection. So back to the drawing board, and we needed to find another journal to publish the actual research. So that kind of maybe is a good example of the speed as well. Also, the kind of the frameworks and the kind of objectives are, of course, very, very much different. I'm not supposed to create any theoretical analysis in my current work, but applying those are actually a very useful way to understand, for example, if we are trying to understand what is a habit and what is actually a ritual, or how kind of using some kind of service is actually an example of creating your personal identity. So that is kind of like a useful way of giving more depth to the analysis and to the understanding of the current topic that we're working on. And usually our customers are really excited that I bring an academic vibe to the project as well, in a way that everybody can understand without the unnecessary jargon that often academic work does. But my personal wish is to also create a hybrid career. I still want to work on academic projects in the future as well, and write articles and publish and collaborate with academics as well, because I believe that Finnish academic sector needs more bridging to the applied research as well, to the private sector. It's a question of culture, and there's a lot of prejudices towards one another. But I believe when we are trying to just share knowledge that, okay, we do the same stuff that you are doing this way because the objectives of this and this and this, and the other party can just like, okay, that's interesting, we can actually use that when we are doing this and this and this. So that's something that I'm really, really hoping for to see more in the future, and especially in the humanities, because having a degree in humanities coming to the business sector or private sector, it's not something that you're not an eligible candidate usually if you have a philosophy degree. But as we already discussed, gladly the kind of climate here in Finland and globally is changing. So we will see more philosophers working for companies in the future.
That's really interesting point. And when you think like people from humanities, they are entering the business world. There's one key thing is that how do you explain the business value of your past? How do you explain, give words to the value that you can bring to company or like in consulting also? Yeah. So there's kind of a gap between also the qualitative research that you are representing, and also because businesses are mainly number specific. Yeah. So how do you give value to the qualitative research?
Yes, exactly. How to measure the impact of finding whys and not how much.
Yeah. And that why can be crucial for the future of the company.
Yeah, that very much so. Very much so.
This has been excellent. As a final question, Anna, I would like to ask you. You already talked a little bit about the future. So, do you have any ambitions or dreams for the future, in terms of your career plans?
One of that was the bridging the private and the academic sector. But one industry that I would really like to work with is the death industry. I know that it's a little bit morbid, but having done research, 7 years of research of how people are using digital environments to create rituals and mourn their loved ones, that gave me a kind of spark also to, if possible, to work with maybe the government or private companies who are working with death and bereavement as well. When finishing my PhD, I got the opportunity to talk about the results to many, many organizations who are working with bereaved people, such as the Red Cross or Finnish Church, etc. So it was very rewarding to reveal what's happening in digital environments. And mind you, this was almost 10 years ago, and the technology that we understand now is very much different than, for example, 2012 or something like that. But that's something that I would really, really like to work on. I know that the Finnish government has a quite extensive service design project at the moment, especially regarding on the how when your family member dies and what are the kind of procedures and the documents and everything that comes around of dealing with the death of a family member. So the Finnish government is having a project around that, and I've been keeping my eye on that. But also working with funeral directors or something like that would be really interesting. Finnish death culture is very different from other Nordic countries, for example. And usually the stuff that hits off, for example, in Sweden, it takes a couple of years to land in Finland. For example, streaming online funerals for family members who live far away. Now, of course, because of COVID, that's becoming a quick norm, if you would say. But yeah, that's something that I would really like to work on in the future as well.
Very interesting, and interesting thoughts for the future. Thank you, Anna Haverinen. Thank you, Jani. I think this was a good ending for our conversation here. And thank you for joining our studio. This is very rewarding, and we are very thankful that we were able to have you as our studio guest.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So this was Aivo Studio, and if you like our episodes, remember to follow us on social media to stay up to date with our latest episodes. So thank you very much, and see you.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.